Hey there, welcome back to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. We are online all the time at npr.org/Bryant Park. You guessed it, it's time for the most emailed, most read, most mosted stories on the internet. Let's do the most. Did I sing that?
You inflected it with passion, gusto.
Singing would have been saying, the most.
That would have been vibrato, and yeah. That would have gotten high marks from Simon Cowell. Yeah.
Okay, let us begin now with Tricia McKinney.
Hello. Hi. I have one of the most popular articles from the New York Times arts section.
Yeah.
And it's actually about the number one book on their trade paperback fiction bestseller list, which we talked about on the show a while ago. It's called The Shack by William P. Young, a.k.a. Paul Young.
Yeah.
And it's a Christian novel. And Rachel, you and I talked to Paul Young. And so the book, you know, if people recall, started out, he wrote it for his kids to kind of explain his spiritual awakening. And then a friend helped him publish it. And then they spent about $300 on marketing. And just through word of mouth, this thing caught on. And we found it when it was on the USA Today bestseller list. Well, now it's on the New York Times bestseller list. It's number one at Borders. It's even outselling, at Barnes & Noble, it's even outselling Oprah's guy, Eckhart Tolle. So, yeah, so it's big. And apparently now, so here's the change since we last talked to him. In May, Hachette Book Group USA entered into a partnership to continue to publish the book. They're now placing marketing advertisements on subways in Atlanta, Chicago, and New York. They're running spots on CNN and local TV stations.
Gosh, he must be freaking out. When we talked to him, he was overwhelmed.
Yeah, well, apparently, according to Windblown Media, the publisher, they've sold more than 1 million copies. So, you know, a lot of that's word of mouth, they said. So we'll see. It's really taken off.
Or listening to the Bryant Park Project.
Yeah.
I'm sure we had a lot to do with it.
Yeah. Ian.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a most emailed from Yahoo News.
Mm-hmm.
I was pretty excited about the Boy George tour. Supposed to start July 11th. You guys pretty excited?
You've been talking about it nonstop, man.
Yeah, I know.
I've been dressing in drag all week.
That's not drag. My style. So it's off though. Boy George has been denied a visa. U.S. authorities cited some looming legal issues overseas. You may recall he was accused of false imprisonment and assault. His lawyers
imprisoning us with his lyrical greatness.
Something way different.
Yeah, his lawyers in London are not talking about it. But George, quote, in a statement, is astounded at the decision, and his lawyers here in the States are looking at it and hoping someone will change their mind.
Do his friends call him Boy?
That was the weird thing about this article, is he's quoted as George, which seems like, I guess that's a first and last name.
I'm pretty sure his last name is George. I think when I was living in London, I might have seen the Boy George story.
His name's George Dowd.
Oh.
Isn't it Dowd?
I have no idea. I have absolutely no clue.
Anyway.
Well, that's sad.
You said that with such confidence, Trish, and then it just withered away pretty quickly there.
I think...
Welcome to my world.
George Allen O'Dowd.
O'Dowd. Yeah. All those sad George Allen O'Dowd fans out there. Here's a little something for you.
Do you really want to hurt me?
Now, this song, if you listen to the lyrics, has a lot of relevant lines. You know, he could say, I could wait 1,000 years... till I go over to America for my tour. I added the second part of that, but yeah. So, listen up.
In my heart, the fire's burning. Oh man, gets me every time.
Perhaps it was his association with the Church of the Poisoned Mind that raised the ire of U.S. officials.
Really did him in.
Rachel.
Okay, I have the second most emailed story at CNN.com. America, these United States, is about to nominate its first female 4-star general. This woman has been nominated by the Pentagon. They announced it on Monday. President Bush nominated Lieutenant General Anne E. Dunwoody to serve as head of the Army's supply arm. Now, by law, women can't take part in combat jobs in the military, which is the typical path to 4-star rank. And so that's why you've not seen very many women in those positions. But apparently, Anne is going to be the first. She still has to be...
calling her
confirmed.
I think you're supposed to call her General Dunwoody. Why don't you just call her Sweetie, Rachel?
Yeah.
Easy. Only I can say that. You guys can't say that.
Petraeus over here? Yeah.
But I can call her Anne. Anyway, that's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
Okay.
Congratulations, General.
That's all I have to say.
Even though it's not Thursday, more women news as we go to the number one story in a lot of places like CNN and the Rocky Mountain News. Sports bra saves hiker stranded in the Alps. Yes, a 24-year-old American was stranded for 3 days, but then she unclasped her sports bra, kept her shirt on because she knew she'd need that for warmth, hooked the sports bar to some sort of rescue pole, signaled the rescuers. Very clever girl. Sports bra saved her life.
Get on you, lady.
All right, and I've got a most emailed here from NPR.org. Most viewed, most emailed. You know, as you might expect, George Carlin is all over the most lists on NPR.org. The comedian passed away over the weekend at age 71. And they posted some clips of a 2004 interview that Carlin did on WHYY's Fresh Air, as the show Ian used to know so well.
I remember it.
Indeed. So here's George Carlin speaking with Terry Gross, and he begins talking about the power of shocking language.
It's superstitious. These words have no power. We give them this power by refusing to be free and easy with them. We give them great power over us. They really in themselves have no power. It's the rest of the sentence that makes them either good or bad.
In your 1972 recording, you talk about how it's perfectly okay to say, don't prick your finger, but mm-hmm. you can't say, don't finger your blank.
Yeah, you can't reverse the two
words. You can't reverse the two words. So comics work with the power of words. And mm-hmm. in a way, the fact that certain words are supposed to be taboo, as you point out, that yes. gives them power.
That's right.
And that makes those words more powerful for you when you want to mm-hmm. use them. So do you feel like you've been able to work with the taboo nature of certain words and, you know, make that work in your favor?
Well, what...
Like in that classic routine.
Yeah. That is an interestingly... a disguised way, and I don't mean you were trying to deceive me or anything, but it's in a disguised way of saying, well, don't some people just use these for shock value? You get this phrase all the time from interviewers, shock value. Well, shock is a kind of a heightened form of surprise, and surprise is at the heart of comedy. So if you're using the word in a way to heighten the impact of the sentence or season the stew, they are, after all, great seasonings. There are sentences that, without the use of hell or damn, even lose all their impact. So they have a proper place in language, and in my case, I just like them because they are real and they do have impact. They do make a difference in a sentence. But if you're using them for their own sake, that's probably kind of weak. If you're using them in some way that you feel enhances what you're doing and delivering, that's another thing.
Now, you have always talked about language in your comedy, and mm-hmm. one of the things you talk about in your new book is, well, you describe political correctness as America's newest form of intolerance.
Yeah.
How do you see political correctness as actually a form of intolerance?
Well, because it dictates ways of speaking and therefore thinking that a person may not be comfortable with or agree 100% with. It's sort of a diktat. And it is intolerant of other... I'm not saying it shouldn't be intolerant of blatant racism or something like that, but there are gradations in these so-called offenses, and they don't all qualify for the same, I think, kind of... You know, the problem with it is that it's censorship from the left, which I for one, wasn't expecting. You know, we sort of get used to the fact that more conservative regimes in various places around the world try to do a lot to control the way we think and speak, but we don't expect it from our liberal democracy so much.
Did language get you into trouble as a kid?
Well, I because I liked language, as I sang, my grandfather wrote out all of the works of Shakespeare in his adult life longhand because of the joy it gave him. Those were his words. I do it for the joy it gives me. So that gene was active in our family. So I had that, as I described earlier. But I then started collecting exotic combinations of curses that I heard in my neighborhood. I was probably 13 or 14 at the time. And there were guys who would put together a sentence in the heat of anger or in some ornate descriptive passage in something they were describing. And they would have an adjective or two, they would be self-hyphenated. They would have made up a form and tacked it on to some noun that it didn't really go with. And the rest of the sentence might have been some colorful verb that was, again, very inventive street language. But I wrote them down, and I had a little list of them. I had about 10 or 12 of them. There are a few I can still remember. But I've had that in my wallet. And my mother was a snoop and discovered things I had stolen that way and confronted me with them. But in this case, looking in my wallet, she found this list. And I heard her. I came in one night, and I opened the door very slightly in the apartment on the second floor. And I heard her talking to my Uncle John, and she was worried about me anyway because I was kind of I was getting like a loose cannon kind of a adolescent. And I heard her saying, I think he may need a psychiatrist, John. I think we may have to get a child psychologist for him, because she was telling him these words and showing him this list. So, yeah, they got me in trouble that way, but at least it was a creative effort.
That was comedian George Carlin in a 2004 interview on WHYY's Fresh Air. For links to that and all the stories from The Most, go to npr.org/Bryant Park.